You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
At the bubble tea bar. Oh, being single's not so bad. You go to parties when you want. You have the freedom to do what you want. But I want someone to share my life with. I'm afraid to get hurt again. Keep your head down. Don't look. Don't make eye contact. Oh, no. Pretend you didn't see her. She's attractive. But probably not my type. She's probably a Scorpio. Too controlling. But she sure is pretty. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette.
And Jim.
You know, we have so many things to talk about. I wanted to talk about something about you, Lisette. Before we met. Uh-huh. Before we met. I was told, and I've read it in some of our books, and when you give a lecture or you give a session or a training, that you say, I had 300 relationships, and that you were introduced to hundreds, if not thousands, of eligible men at the companies that you audited, that you worked with as you traveled throughout your career for 13 years prior to meeting me, that you had this opportunity to meet all these people. Why didn't you fall in love?
That is a good question. Maybe this is the topic in our show today. How I can be fall in love when I have so many opportunity, but maybe is the wrong person.
So why do we fall in love? Is it something we can control? Is it not something we control? Is it logic? Is it science? Is it magic?
Is instinct? Is emotional? Is animal?
We are animal, part human. And what we mean by that is we have animal instincts that have driven us and our continuation of our species for thousands, tens of thousands, if not millions of years in some way, meaning we have evolved over many, many years to be who we are, part animal, needing to mate, find somebody or something to be with that we're attracted to in order to have offspring, to keep the generations going. And before we had all these words and all these books to read, the number one thing that drove us to meeting someone else was, I'm attracted to them, and well, maybe I'm not even attracted. It's just that I'm in that state of mind right now. I'm in a frenzy. I'm in a mating frenzy because it's beach season. What do you think?
Yes, I guess it depends how you feel in the moment, because some people after breakup maybe it's difficult to jump in the next relationship, but another person, it's different. Maybe when I jump in so quickly, try to forget the past and then create some kind of short relationship.
A short relationship to get through something.
Yeah. I'm something, but that I remember in the past I call this is some kind of appetizer. So I say, I have somebody for no be alone, and I we call, yes, I have one appetizer. I take a little bit, but I know he completed the plate.
Oh, so you didn't have relationships, but you had lots of appetizers.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to take note of that.
You don't know that. Oops.
We I think in the second part of the show, we're going to get into something very interesting, which has to do with why we may, not Lizette and I, well, maybe in the past, but why people in general may be in a relationship and may get into another relationship. What causes that? Something we didn't talk about before we just got on the air here, but it was notes that I had been taking about how somebody who's in a good relationship, and even though they may communicate very well with their partner, all of a sudden goes off the deep end and gets in another relationship. What causes that? Would we like to discuss that as well? I think so. But today's show, we're going to start off with why we fall in love, how we fall in love, why, how, and how we may be able to change that path if we're in the stage of not having a relationship, that the next relationship we have is one that potentially, if you'd like, one that could potentially last. Something that we are doing now or not doing now that we could do differently in the future. But going back to that, should I go to what we asked? We asked some of our friends and audience members, what would be a tip for how to have a long-lasting relationship? And one of the ones that came back, which I thought was very insightful, was we both tell each other that you don't have to be here, that it's our choice, and by choice, every day we make the choice to be with each other, and it is our commitment daily to be with each other. I'm paraphrasing this, so I apologize if I get it wrong, but the general idea is that it's, and I use the word, it's an open relationship. Not open where you can be with other people, but open that the door's open. If you don't want to be in the relationship, it's okay to leave. Which leads to the ability to make a decision. The decision to be with the other person shows daily that you love them. The daily choice of being with them. Taking the pressure off the person of having to stay with you because you're going to make them feel guilty. How could you dare leave me?
Well, maybe that the psychology backwards. So I don't want to stay with you. I don't want to stay with you.
No, that's not it. Well, that's actually when, you know, if you talk about all the things. I like the idea that you say, hey, I want you to want to be with me. The moment you don't want to be with me, let me know. Don't stay here if you don't want to be with me. And therefore, and we talked about this earlier today, periodically during the day, during the week, I'll send Lizette a little heart message through the phone. And it's because I realized during the day, it's like I want to be with Lizette and I want to get back home if I'm at work or if I'm somewhere else. And I want her to know that I'm thinking of her.
I do too.
You do too. You send yourself little hearts.
For myself.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I like
that. Yeah. Well, that you should. You should do that. I would do that if I were you. Anyway, so we have a good time, and part of how we and why we have a good time is that I think we have very similar personalities in some aspects.
Yeah.
Similar values and beliefs.
Yeah, that is true.
Similar family backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Educational backgrounds, hair background. Oh, no, that's not true. But there's a lot of similarities between us that allow us to have a common goal, communicate it well, help each other out. And I think last week we spoke about we sometimes have different methods of attaining a goal. Like Lizette is much more organized and follow this path and then next do this and next do that. And I'm a little bit more all over the place, like we were tonight. So tonight, Lizette left me here in the studio to go, I don't know, do something. I guess
clean the dishes.
Go to the green room. Go to the green room so the makeup artist could take care of her before the show. Get a pedicure and a manicure, and no, we didn't have any of that. But she asked me to put down on paper, you know, what are the sections of our show today. Usually we like to have the first number of minutes being the intro to what we're going to talk about, and then in the middle a little bit more research, and then maybe something funny towards the end with a summary. So I had to force myself to do that, which then helps. That helps me. It's difficult sometimes, and that's why she had to leave, because I was, you know, burning up down here going, what do I need to do?
And I speak English, so I don't got it.
So Lizette comes down. I have laid out on paper now what I think we want to talk about. And then the show starts, and I immediately change mm-hmm. what we're talking about. But... But it's because there's something in all this that hits me as this makes sense to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important. And as we get to the next section, we'll go a little bit more into it. But if you go back to the video at the beginning of the show about the guy trying to make a decision of should I get into this relationship or should I not get into this relationship, it has to do with how we typically get into relationships and why they last or they don't. And there's so, you know, relationships are now so complex. And going back to evolution, they might not have been as complex. Before humans had the ability to speak, maybe relationships were simpler. Who knows? Nobody said anything about it. Anyway, we'll be right back after this. 90 Day Soulmate on LA Talk Radio. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
We'll continue on with our subject that we were talking about before. Why do we fall in love? Why do we get into a relationship? What are the stages of a relationship? So we have a couple of different articles here that we've been looking through and perusing, reviewing, looking over, trying to come up with some ideas. And what's funny sometimes is how similar romantic relationships are to office environments and teams. And why I'm bringing this up is that when you see two things that have nearly identical paths and there seems to be a pattern, then maybe patterns in romantic life that happen somehow are paralleled in other areas of our lives, whether it's a baseball team, a corporate environment, a church setting, a band, whatever you're in with other people, that there are group dynamics that have similar stages as a romantic relationship stage. We'll go through that, and maybe that makes it easier to remember what these are for both of us, for all of us.
Finally, we have one guideline.
A guideline.
So what is the first stage?
Well, the first stage is that, you can call it many different things, but it's that lust stage, which is the euphoria. I'm just, mm-hmm. like you have so many, what is that called? Chemicals released in your brain and your body that you're yeah. in euphoria.
Mm-hmm. You feel some kind of attraction for this person.
Yeah, in this one talks about euphoria, and this other one talks about lust and attraction, mm-hmm. where the testosterone and the estrogen, the chemicals that are pulsing through us, both men and women have both testosterone and estrogen in different proportions, although testosterone has been shown that in both men and women, it raises the libido for both men and women. Mm-hmm. And estrogen also does raise the libido, but not as much. So that is one that where that stuff's pulsing around in us, maybe where it's at our strongest for men, what, when they're 18, 16, 19? Who knows?
45? Who knows?
70 like me. And women go through different times of their life, and people go through different times of their life where these levels go up and down. one of the studies talked about women where they'll go through their cycles, and where there's more estrogen, they have a higher, has been shown to be more sexually attracted to someone else during those time periods. So those are two things. Those are the chemicals that are usually associated with the procreation, the continuation of the species.
Mm-hmm. It's a natural.
Natural.
Chemical. Okay.
It's natural. Well, actually, all these chemicals are produced naturally, although they are similar to the chemicals that are produced not naturally. There's similar effects. Like one of these is similar to cocaine, but it's naturally produced in a relationship. So why not produce it for free in a relationship?
So this is when you say an addiction.
Addicted to love.
Addicted to love.
So the euphoric stage can be the testosterone, the estrogen. The other here is dopamine. Dopamine released. It's a pleasure. I always hear dopamine and I think of dolphin for some reason. I have no idea why. Because I'm a dope. But, or and, the that is a, you know, we feel pleasure. I think one of the articles talks about it a little bit here, which is, let's see. Oh, it's a reward pathway. It's released in our brain and it makes us feel pleasure, makes us feel like something was good for us, and we really like that. That's part of the attraction stage. The second stage is the early attachment stage, meaning now you're through the lust and attraction. You're weaning off that a little bit, but you're still attracted to the person. Maybe you're just not as passionate as the first little bit of time period.
Mm.
And now you're getting early attachment where you're starting to connect and feel a connection, an attachment to the other person. And in that stage, this article talks about how oxytocin and vasopressin are raised. Those levels are raised, which help bind the two people together, that initial attachment.
So in this stage, maybe you can have some kind of sabotage.
Yeah.
This reminds me of one of the books. We have one chapter relating to sabotage relationship.
And I think so. So now that your chemicals are starting to wane a little bit, those lust ones and attraction ones, and you're in that attachment stage, you might start sabotaging your relationship.
Why?
Now you're thinking. You're thinking.
Yeah, because you're from...
Your frontal cortex just popped back on. Oh, that was one that's very interesting, is that in the initial stages of lust and attraction, where those chemicals, those natural produced chemicals, are pumping through us in that part of the relationship where you feel euphoria, those chemicals can shut off the frontal cortex, or the logical thinking part of our brain, which makes us do things early on in a relationship, potentially, that we wouldn't do if we had a clear mind.
So when you do the craziness stuff.
Like
what?
Like hold a radio in the rain and bring chocolates and flowers.
The second, the third week to Las Vegas to marry the person.
Yes.
Ooh.
And then then your brain clicks on. You're like, what did I do? Hey, this is my baby left me. Sorry. But the shutting off of that now clicks back on. And that's what we wanted to talk about. You're now in the stage where you're starting to really start thinking about the relationship. Oh, is this the right person? Oh, their earlobe is rather small.
Oh, no, I smell good.
Well, they don't smell good. Well, which may not actually happen, because the smell is one of the
attraction.
One of the attraction things. One of the, and what's interesting about that, a smell that we are attracted to chemically and naturally may be one that once we go past that stage, and you're actually right about that, we may start noticing a smell that in our mind we think, oh, we don't like. But it could have been something that actually triggered the initial attraction.
Yeah, but you are in the euphoria stage, so you don't recognize.
You're right. Mm-hmm. So now past the euphoria stage, and you're like, what is that smell? Ooh. You know, so that's one. You start thinking about maybe how they are treating other people. Last week we talked about how people are with waiters and waitresses, and when you notice the person you've been dating or you're with, and suddenly you realize that, wait a minute, they're not the person I thought they were when I was in euphoria.
Stage.
So what happens in this sabotage stage is...
This stage number three.
You enter stage number three, or you could, which is called, in this case, the crisis stage. You start experiencing challenges in the relationship. I want to stay up late. I want to go to bed early. I want to travel. I want to stay home. I want to eat out. I want to stay home and cook at home. I want to go to the movies.
Yeah, I like to running outside.
I like to run outside. Oh, yeah, I love running with you until the euphoria wears off.
I don't like
running.
Come on.
I like reading books. As long as they are picture books.
Oh, is that the 90-day book?
90-day book.
This is the only one.
Only read 90-day book. But the crisis stage is... the stage when somebody is in early parts of a relationship, it's the one that's the most difficult to get through. And it's actually a good stage.
The crisis?
It is a good stage.
Okay, why?
Because it tests the relationship. It tests the compatibility. It tests the commitment of the two people that are in the relationship.
And also the capacity for each to see how handle difficult situation. I say, is easy, you believe or say, oh, this is a good person in good way. When you have some difficulties, sometimes you know who is the person. Yeah.
That is true. You see how they react in crisis. It's like the person who... suddenly you see somebody and they get a big gash in their arm and they're bleeding, and the person you're with jumps up, jumps into action. They help put a tourniquet around the arm, they bandage it up, and you're like, wow, I can't believe they did that.
Or the other person see you and running away, or acting
right.
Ignored.
Ignore. I don't see that. So Christ sees turmoil, trouble, whether it's between the two of you or an outside source, a catalyst, something that's happening in your relationship can help test the relationship. And it, depending on if the two of you are on a team and working towards the same goal, you may say, wow, they are not what I expected. Mm-hmm. Or you will say, wow, they're more than I expected, which...
expectations.
Oh, expectation.
So you have expectation relationship?
That's an interesting one. I think we wrote that. Oh, look at that. We wrote that there. Should you have expectations or not in the relationship? What do you think?
Okay, I talking with somebody, they say that my secret for my long relationship is not have expectation with from my husband.
And no expectations.
Yeah, but I start to thinking and I say, everybody has some kind of expectation. So really you can remove 100% and say, I don't have any expectation.
So we wrote down idealistic versus realistic. You may have an idealistic belief or expectation for what a relationship is. You or somebody may have the belief of a relationship from the last seven movies you've watched that have been, oh, this is a relationship. It's supposed to be so beautiful. There's supposed to be so much stress in the relationship. And at the end, you're supposed to come through and just love each other. As as the lights go down and the wine's poured and petals of roses are everywhere.
It will happen with the routine, when the real life.
When in real life, when you can't afford champagne this week.
When you can't go to the restaurant and cooking and home and cleaning and take the garbage out.
Exactly.
So, what happened?
What happens?
The music.
The music stops. What happens when there's a crisis economically? What happens when there's COVID? What happens when there's a war in your country? What happens when gas prices go to $5 a gallon? What happens when there is no gas? Is that person there with you to get through all that? Or
say, I go back to buy cigarettes. I'm not coming back.
I'm going to get cigarettes and I'll be back in 10 years.
Years, what happened when he returned? He said, oh, I forget.
I forget the matches. So will the partner, will your partner help me? Will your partner help you, or will my partner help me if these are the situations? What is the situation about, and if you're able to speak about it, where there was a couple and they were dating and one of them fell ill?
Yeah, that is a sad history. The couple have maybe 2 or 3 year relationship, and discovering that she have a cancer.
Mm.
And then she need to go to the therapy, doctor, and the relationship start to become bad because the guy don't want to handle all this stuff. So unfortunately, she told me, it's my last turn of my life. I can live more drama than I have already. Right. So they break up, and she unfortunately died alone.
So that is one of the examples, and it doesn't have to be that
strange crisis like
that much crisis.
Yeah, but this is one example that you have some expectation that your love stay with you, and the last time in the bad part.
Yes. So, and our expectations can be different from one another. And I think I wrote down some other things here. Do you expect to get flowers? Do you expect to get little notes? Do you expect to get emails? Do you expect to be touched? Like, yeah. I love you, honey.
Yeah. Connection, communication.
So what is, and you've probably seen things on, what is it called? Your love profile, your love, like what is the way that someone shows you love, that you feel loved? Is it physical? Is it mental? Is it passion?
And also it's on a little detail every day. It's not just one day. So what happened when the crisis, and then what is
so,
the last?
So if you make it, through the crises, more than one. The more you get through different things together, the more you're cementing the relationship, the more you're cementing the communication between each of you. I was reading something else about, I can always look, and I'll just say this from a point of Lizette, that Lizette is so complex, I'll never really, really understand her. And if I understand how different she is, or how anyone is so different, I can constantly be trying to learn more about her.
Curiosity. Yeah.
Curiosity did not kill the cat. Curiosity kept the relationship. Always be curious of your partner.
Yeah. It's a good tip.
We have to look at the excitement of the early part of the relationship versus the routine of the later part of the relationship and say, how do we keep some of that excitement, but also understand the necessity for routine, that there has to be part of the relationship that's routine. I wanted to go to that next step where it's as the relationship is cemented, it gets into the deep attachment stage. Now we've communicated at a deeper level than before, that we're much more transparent in what we talk about. our feelings, what's happened in our families individually, what our likes and dislikes are. But now we're really open. Early on, and you've heard this from us before, early on, Lizette was the first person, the first woman that I ever said, okay, here's my password to my computer and phone. I don't care anymore. And it's not that I don't care anymore. I care enough now that I realize that Lizette needs to know everything about me if she chooses, and that there's really, I don't want to hide from love.
Yeah.
And that can be very scary to some people. Like, they want to be shielded because they're afraid to be hurt. But if you've been hurt a number of times before and it seems like a pattern because you've always tried to protect yourself, and every time you protect yourself, you eventually get hurt anyway, just open completely up. Be as vulnerable. I don't like the expression vulnerable, but be as open as you can, because perhaps that's where you have the greatest fulfillment in a relationship as you could possibly have.
Yeah, so when you have more stuff that you hide, it's more easy that somebody hurt you. When you are really transparent, the people can find how
that's,
to hurt you.
That's true. It's you've probably all heard of the emails that go around that come from an unknown person, and it looks like it's coming from yourself, and it says, I have access to your computer, and I see what you've watched, and I see the pictures, and I'm going to reveal them. This is a big scam. You don't see this?
No.
Anyway, these are there are blackmailers out there who will, some will fake a relationship with you, so you'll send pictures. You've heard that. And then, I'm going to release that picture to your friends or your family, and the whole idea is to get you to pay money so they don't, you know.
Okay, but if you don't have nothing to hide or pictures, you know it's a scam.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the point would be is that if you're with your partner and you're always worried about something that you did, then that's going to come across in your behavior, in your communication, and eventually it can lead to, I mistrust you for some reason, and I don't know why, and it's because the apparent shielding of information means, you're hiding something, or could,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so why we said that the relationship, the romantic relationship stages are similar to group dynamics or group stages is for this. Years ago, and this goes back to 1995, somewhere in that area, I was training in my marketing position in a company. I was training internally groups at a 4,000-person corporation on team dynamics. And there were four stages. You've probably heard this, four stages of teams. There would be the forming stage of a team where people first get together. They first meet. You're all on the team, and you're getting to know people. No one knows each other. Everyone's on their best behavior. Sounds just like when you meet somebody for the first time, right? That euphoric stage. You're all so happy to be in the same room together, to be on this team. And that's the forming stage. And again, euphoria of the first stage, euphoric stage of a passionate relationship being similar to the forming stage of a team. And then the second stage of a team is the norming. We are on a team. We have people from all different backgrounds, but we're on the same team. So we're all doing things and to support each other. We're getting to know each other. We want to be like everyone else on the team, which is the early attachment stage. So we're no longer euphoric. We're trying to be like the other person. We're trying to get along with them. We're that norming. We want to normalize our relationship with everyone on the team. So in a romantic relationship, we talked about the third stage being the crisis stage, where we start facing challenges. And teams do that too, and that's called the storming phase or the storming stage of team dynamics, where people's personalities, pasts, experience, leads them to take positions in the team that are opposite and opposed to someone else. And now they start arguing that my idea versus your idea versus this person's idea. And it's tough because this is the first time during that team relationship that people are now being individuals, putting out their own views, getting into differences of opinion based upon different backgrounds are now, well, I'm an engineer, it's got to be done this way. I'm in marketing, we have to say it this way, and it's got to be posed this way to a client. And here's the accountant with their position. And it can be all those things. It can be position-based, it can be experience-based, it can be personality-based. But the team dynamic in the storming or third stage is people start taking positions and making little teams within the team to, I don't want to use the word gang up, but it is the crisis stage of a team. But if the team has a greater goal, we need to do this and get this project done and it needs to be successful for the good of all of us. Or if the relationship has that greater goal of we love each other so much, we got to get through this, we need to figure out how to get through this, the team will get to that next stage, which is the performing stage. It means performing at a high level. We will take all our differences of opinions and come up with now a new way of acting, a new way of getting to a decision, a new way of moving forward in this endeavor that we're working on, and get a better result by having the individual differences add up and give other options that would not be there if everybody just stayed in that norming stage. So the storming stage that takes you through to the performing stage is important. Just like in a romantic relationship, the crisis stage, where we now are working through challenges, gets us to an attachment stage, which is a deep attachment stage. In a team environment, we can get to a team that has individual personalities and traits, but they're working together to get to a better goal.
So I guess the one important thing is the people, the couple, when it's in the second stage, understand what is the goal. Because if you don't have idea, maybe my goal is the appetizer and your goal is marry with me. So it's different goal and maybe we play in different way.
So some of this will get us into our third section of our show. But that's absolutely right. Is it okay to only start thinking about that goal when you get to that stage? Or should you know before you start a relationship that if this relationship works out, this is my ultimate goal is? If you're in a stage of your life where it's like, I just want to date people, then that
be
might be fine.
And transparent and say, this is my goal. Do you want to play with my goal set? It's a game.
But a lot of people will say, oh, sure, because they just want to date you anyway. And then when you get to that next stage and say, okay, I only wanted to date for a little bit, they're like, but, and they think they can change your mind. And now I'm hurt. I'm so hurt.
Because you marry me?
No, but this is now a crisis stage. No. That actually is a crisis stage, because if the people have different goals, then it's not one common goal. It's tough to get through that. So that is a perfect example of a crisis, two different wants in a relationship. I want a long-term relationship. I want commitment. I want a partnership. And the other's like, girls just want to have fun. Something like that. Or boys, men, women.
Kiwis.
Kiwis.
Okay.
We will be back right after this message with more 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
We're back for the second time. Actually, you don't know this. We just recorded 6 minutes of the show with the recorder turned off. It was the best show ever. It was amazing.
Yeah, Yeah, you're missing everybody.
Oh, you miss it. It would have been like millions of hits on the internet.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, we lost it. It's my fault.
Try again.
This is the crisis. So, we talked about relationships and how to get to the crisis mode, and that in the crisis mode is when we find out if the relationship's going to last and it's going to become stronger and we're going to stay together. There's something else, though, that you spoke about, is that what happens when you get to the crisis mode, and what if one of the crisis pieces is, well, I want a long-term relationship. And the other person says,
I want to be just dating.
I just want to date. And we talk about that, is that if you have different goals in mind for a relationship and to be with the person, if you don't have the same goal and you're only at the crisis mode finding that out, oh my gosh, you just potentially both wasted so much time.
Yeah.
And we do know that even if you are upfront, oh, we talk about this, upfront being honest and transparent, and someone says, oh, yeah, no, that's fine, I agree with you. Sometimes they're just saying that because they just want to be with you and they hope that they can change your mind, or maybe that's where you are and you hope you can change the other person's mind. The good news of all this is that we can and will be attracted to many people. There will be many people we're attracted to, many people we're not attracted to. We may be attracted to someone who's attracted to us. Someone who we're attracted to may not be attracted to us. Someone we're not attracted to may be attracted to us. And someone we're not attracted to may not be attracted to us. So there are a couple of things in there that are good news. If they're not attracted to us and we're not attracted to them, great. If we're attracted to them and they're attracted to us, great. There are going to be many people who fall into that. But since those initial attractions many times are based upon lust and just attraction from smell, how someone looks, the chemicals that are running around in our body when we're in that dating mode, that we also know that the front part of our brain gets shut off during that part of the relationship, during the initial attraction mode, the initial dating mode where there's the lust and the attraction, and you've got the testosterone and the estrogen running around and the dopamine, and those things are high in our brain. It shuts off the frontal cortex, which really puts us through weeks of dating. Mm-hmm. That might not be good for us. It might not be good for our job. It might not be good for us physically. But we're so euphoric that it doesn't matter. And then we get to the crisis mode. And that's the first time we're pushed to a test of, is this relationship going to last? And at that point, we're going to find out, do we have the same goal in mind? Do we have the same things we like? Have the same things we dislike? You'll get more depth into that and more depth into communication. A study of over 1,500 people gave the following data or details, that of happy couples, 86% of those couples who were happy shared personality traits, values, and beliefs. Their values and beliefs and their personality traits were similar. 86% of happy couples. And why this is so important is that tells you a couple things. That tells you that potentially there were a lot of people who did not have shared personality traits, values, and beliefs that never made it to the couple stage. They were going out, they dated, and then they got to the crisis mode, or the mode where you're let's use storming. I'm going to go back to the team thing. Storming, crisis. They're doing this, and they're like, well, we don't have common goal. We don't have common beliefs and values. We don't have common personality traits. Forget about it.
become friends.
So successful relationships, 86% of those that are happy share similar values and beliefs and personality traits. That being the case, if you don't want to waste a lot of time in the dating game, in the lust and attraction section, only to lose it in the crisis section, what can you do? Give you an idea. Lizette just pointed to this book, 90 Day Soulmate. That's the story of love. 90 Day Soulmate, it's also the name of our program, isn't it? 90 Day Soulmate was a book that we wrote over 10 years ago, but what's in it is very powerful. It has
some kind of checklist that you can do the inventory of your values, your personality, your belief, and then you can know who you are and what are you looking for in the relationship.
So if you really look into yourself and go, what are my values? What are my beliefs? And I think some of the things we talk about is religion. Are you religious or you're not religious? What kind of religion? What are the things that you like about spirituality? Parents, brothers and sisters, past relationships,
family. What's
family, sports, education, hobbies,
healthy.
You know, are you like health? Do you like exercise? That you look into how you are and go, okay, here's my personality traits. Here's my beliefs. Here are my values. These are the things that I value. And by doing this and figuring out really who you are, spending the time to do that, allows you to go into the romantic dating
exciting
pool. Yeah. Where there's that lust and attraction, but it allows you to possibly pre-filter people who have those matching goals, those matching personality traits, those matching beliefs and values. So when you get through the lust and attraction and chemicals that are shutting off the front part of your brain, and now you start going into the front part of your brain and into the thinking logical part, hey, there's a lot of matching.
And maybe you fall double in love.
Double in love. I think that's going to be a new song, Double in Love.
After the crisis.
After the crisis. So the crisis that pushes you, the storming part of the relationship that pushes you to how do we address these challenges of a couple or of partners, that having the same way, the same beliefs of how to address things. You know, I think some of the things we talk about, we just didn't talk about now, but, you know, politics. Imagine finding out that somebody has vastly different political views because you were so busy just being in love and cuddling. And now you find out, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they believe that. Are you going to get through that or is that a crisis?
Oh, you leveled the people.
You're gone. You're out of my life. So the idea is to short-circuit the bad relationships. And I think one of the things we brought up in the past is that if you only want to just date and have fun and go out with people, that's fine. But if you're trying to say, I want to find a soulmate, I want to find a partner that I want to get along with for a long time, then by doing some of this upfront work prior to meeting people helps you filter the people that will match from the people that won't match. And mismatched relationships that never should have been. And I don't know how many of you know people that are in a relationship that you're like, oh my gosh, they don't get along with each other, but no one's willing to just end it. That a lot of relationships, there's some relationships that are in that state, may have been saved by people being honest and open upfront at the beginning of the relationship. And that's what we're hoping to be able to help people with.
This is the plan.
The plan.
To help.
So again, we know we've got opportunities to meet people that we're going to be attracted to, and there's going to be lots. And once the attraction, the high levels of chemical attraction that shuts off our brain ends, we want the common personality traits, values, and beliefs to remain.
And this is the secret for keep long relationship.
The secret. When the chemicals leave our brain, the values, traits, and beliefs remain. I wanted to create a little poem to remember to take this idea and drive it home on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Thank you. Until next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.